I just finished listening to an hour tape of Why I Can Say I'm God from the 3-hour meditation from Nigeria. And as I listened to it, I thought, very good. Always nice to think that things you've done are very good. I don't often listen to what I have done, so I don't know that. But as I was listening to it, I was thinking to myself, why is it that we choose to live on earth rather than in heaven? And I don't mean dying, dead. I don't mean being out of the here and no longer being around here. I mean, why do we choose to live on earth instead of in heaven? Why do we choose to live in an earthly consciousness rather than a heavenly consciousness? Why do we choose to live in an earthly house rather than a heavenly house? Now, we have that opportunity to live in either. And our friends from Nigeria bring home the point to me very solidly. As they live in Nigeria, they have a limited amount of water, so they have buckets of water in their shower. And they're very clean people, very good people, but they use water judiciously, very carefully. And then they come to London, and they use buckets in the shower. And they come to Campbell, and they use buckets in the shower, because that is the way they do it. Now, here in Campbell, we have unlimited water. You turn it on faucet, and it just keeps running. And we water our trees, we water our plants, we water our grass, we water our flowers. We clean off our sidewalks with the water. We skirt the sidewalks and, you know, all the water goes down onto the dirt around it. And when it rains, my goodness sakes, I think it wouldn't stop. Well, many of these factors are true in Nigeria also. The rain comes down, and they use surface water for watering their plants, and they don't have to water them too much because they have pretty good rain over there. But they have the habit of using a bucket in the shower instead of turning on the faucet. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just another way of doing something. But if I invite you into my palace, and my palace is air-conditioned and heat-conditioned and everything, perfect temperature at all times, and you go anywhere in my palace, whether in the bathrooms or in the living room or around the solarium or up in the solarium, or whatever you're doing, looking at the stars or looking at the plants, it doesn't matter. So everything is perfect condition. And the moisture for the solarium is always perfect, right? So you come in there and you are used to having it rain outside because you come from the Midwest or the northern country where it's rainy. And so you come in the house with your raincoat on. And you wear your raincoat in the house. I say, what do you get your raincoat in the house? Well, it might rain. Not in the house. Well, up where we live, the roof leaks occasionally, things like that happen. Well, here, no. Well, you say, oh, well, okay. Hard for me to get accustomed to the fact that it doesn't leak. Hard to me to get accustomed to the fact that the things that I can that I experienced in my other location don't happen here, you know? Very hard. Like, have you ever been to Hollywood? Now, I know some of you haven't, some of you haven't. But in Hollywood, years ago, and they still do, I guess, in Hollywood, where the weather is perfect, what do the women like to wear? Fur coats. They like to wear fur muffs and furs. They don't need them to keep warm. I mean, my goodness sakes, they have hardly anything else on except the fur, you know. And so they have these furs because that's what it has always been, the symbol of abundance, the symbol of wealth, the symbol of opulence, you know. And so what a silly symbol. And in some foreign countries, wearing metal rings around your neck is a symbol of your wealth. The richer you are, the more rings your wife has around her neck. Her head stretches up like that. And it's true. And the lobes of their ears, they drag down, you know. and in their teeth. Why do you think that the current European attitude, and I say European attitude around the world, is to put bells on your fingers and rings on your toes, you know, and rings in your nose and in your ears and in the tongue and in your belly and wherever else they can think of putting things. Now, why do they do that? Why do they do that? Well, there must be some symbology to that. Well, there is a symbology to it. It's a matter of I got to do my own thing. I got to do my own thing. Now, people like to wear old beat-up clothes. These children today who are wearing clothes that hang off of their backside and don't quite make it over their buns, you know. And so they have their underwear up, but their pants are falling down. And you know, it's just a symbol. And now, why do people want such symbols? Why do people want such... but such strange symbols. Now, it would seem to me that we're intelligent people, and we've thought these things through. We know about these things. What do you want? What do you want? What do you want out of life? Do you want out of life the idea that you are just a pawn in the hands of everybody else? Fashion! Mm-hmm. Do you wear clothes for the fashion? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. In earlier days, Napoleon days and so forth, the women wore their breasts outside of their dresses. Remember? Don't you remember that? Yeah, that's what they did. Now, I'm sure they're not all that pretty. A breast is a breast, and a breast in a brassiere is nicely maintained, and the breast has a very lovely attitude about it. But when you got these floppy shopping bags hanging out there, they're not always that attractive. And why people would do such a thing, but they do. They do. That's the fashion. That's the fashion, you know? And it's the strangest thing in the world. And some of these South American tribes, they have these gourds. The gourds are maybe 8-10 feet long. Well, they put the gourd over their penis. They're trying to indicate that their penis has the capacity of the 8 or 10 feet long vehicle. And of course, it's a big joke. But it's just their way of a fashion. And of course, the day will come that they don't do that anymore because it's so bothersome. And also because you never know what's inside that gourd. And you stick that on your penis and you might have an ant or a snake or what have you in that cord come down and give you a bite, and you wouldn't feel very happy about that. Well, we're not looking at this as bad or good. We're just looking at it as what do we do to ourselves to limit ourselves and try to make ourselves look pretty. When do women look their most beautiful? They look their most beautiful when they're natural. And what do? They try to look beautiful by putting on rouge and lipstick and all that stuff, you know. Now, what did Napoleon say to Josephine? He's coming home from the battle, and he said, Josephine, he sent a message to his wife, do not take a bath. I'll be home in 3 weeks. I want the beautiful Josephine odor that I know so well to be awaiting me. He didn't want her. They didn't want baths in those days, you see. They were accustomed to that. They were familiar with that. And today, we think that if we're going to go out for a job interview or talk to anybody, we must have a shower and a bath and put on aftershave cream lotion and douche and what have you. You know, you name it, we play the game. Okay, now, I'm telling you all of this nonsense for only one reason. And that reason is, we are so hung up on other people's attitudes, ideas, programs, and directions for us that we sometimes forget our own. Now, what did they say of Jesus? They said, and Jesus said himself, be in the world, but not of the world. So you're in the world, but you're not of the world. Can you walk through this world wearing a pair of shorts and a shirt and go-aheads, flip-flops, and walk around and have nobody notice you? Can you go to a fine restaurant and no one notice you? Can you go into a fine theater and have no one notice you? Sure. Why are you noticed if you are noticed? You are noticed if you are noticed because you think you're going to be noticed. Mm-hmm. Because they have a sign out there that says, no shoes, no shirt, no shoes, no service, you know. They didn't say anything about pants, you know. And no shirt, no shoes, no service. So, people are conscious of that. And yet, I have been with some of our students who are not rebels, but they're casuals. And we have walked into restaurants where those signs existed. They didn't see them. I didn't see them. And the waiter didn't see it. And nobody else did. We go in there, we eat, we come out, we pay for it. And they're bare feet. And my son, he always ran around barefoot. And no matter where we went, nobody ever saw his bare feet. Nobody ever questioned him on it. Nobody said, you can't come in here with bare feet. Because he was dressed. He was always to the hilt of whatever it was that was important to him. Now, it's all in our mind. It's all in our mind. Okay, now, would you like to live in a temple of purity, of goodness, of original purity and integrity? Or would you like to live in a hovel? That means something less than perfect, you know. A hovel doesn't have indoor plumbing. It doesn't have a sink in the kitchen. It doesn't have a refrigerator, washer, dryer. It doesn't have a stove. It doesn't have beds. You sleep on the floor, you know, which is fine too. But a hovel is just something, like a little hut, a little shed. And would you like to live in that or a beautiful penthouse apartment? What would you like? Well, the apartment sounds good. I don't know that I want to live in the apartment in the middle of a big city. I'd like to have it out in the country. But would you like to live in a primitive house? Well, you see, where's your attention? Where's your attention? If I go into a primitive house and somebody's living there that I'm going to see, and I walk in the door and I say, well, Fred, how are you? And Fred is sitting in his lotus position, and he looks up from the dirt floor. He's not sitting on a blanket or a cushion or anything. He's naked, sitting on a dirt floor. He looks up and he says, Herb, how nice. Come, join me. So I join him in meditation. And I sit on his dirt floor, and ants are crawling around, things like that, you know. Don't bother him. And it doesn't bother me. And so we sit there, and he closes his eyes, and I come to visit him. He closes his eyes. And so I close my eyes, and then I have his vibrations already because they're excellent. And I sit there and meditate with him, and after a while I say, well, Freddie, got to be on my way. And he says, oh, you can stay overnight if you want. It's dark outside already, you know. And I had come there in the morning. And I was sitting there all day long, never realizing once that the day had flown by, and that I was sitting cross-legged on the floor on this piece of sod, you know, and that we weren't saying anything. And crawling all around us are ants and other creatures that live in the outer limits. But you see, where was I? Was I in his hovel, or was I in paradise? Was I in the kingdom of heaven? Where was I? Was I, what sort of a world was I in now? So I said, now I better get going. He said, oh, you can stay overnight if you want. Where's the bed? Right there, flatten out. Stretch feet out, you know. And, okay, you know. So I lay down, put my head on the dirt sod, you know, and the ants crawling all around, and nothing disturbed me. I didn't even think of asking Freddie for something to eat. It never dawned on me because it wasn't in my consciousness. And the next morning, I wake up, and Freddie is still sitting there meditating. And I say, gee, Freddie, you sure give a lot of time to meditation. He said, that's true. He said, I can enter meditation or leave it on an instant's notice, absolutely, totally one. When you talk to me, I'm with you. The minute you stop talking, I'm in meditation. Wow, that is great. Now, Freddie, why don't you come visit me in my house? Freddie says, well, sure, when would you like to go? Right now. So Freddy comes to visit me in my normal house with all the rugs on the floor and all the cars in the garage and stuff like that. And we go in the house, and I say, Freddy, would you like a cup of coffee? He said, no, thank you. Would you like a drink of water? No, thank you. Would you like to use the bathroom? No, thank you. Would you like to take a nap? No, thank you. Would you like to, what would you like to do? May I show you my house? Oh, thank you. That'd be very interesting. This is this room. This is the bedroom. This is the living room. Oh, gee, you sure have a lot of rooms. When do you have time to use them all? You know? And I say, well, that's a good question. Herb, if you don't need me or don't have anything to say any further, I'll just meditate if you don't mind. But Freddie, you're standing up. That's right. I'm standing up. When I choose to meditate, my entire body is just completely relaxed, completely doing whatever. It can be standing or lying or sitting or doing anything. My body is not my master. My body is not my temple. I am the temple, and my body is just my vehicle. My body is for me to use. Well, don't you like a glass of water or some wine or scotch or some bourbon or some soda water? What would you like? No, thank you. Well, would you like a sandwich, a hamburger, maybe, you know? No, thank you. And don't you ever eat? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I eat every once in a while. What do you eat? Food that is mental. Mental food. My goodness sakes. Now, okay, I choose to go and live with Freddie for 5 years and live on his terms in his little house on his dirt floor. And after 5 years, I no longer need the bathroom. I no longer need anything. I am sustained absolutely from the manna within. And after 5 years, I say, Freddie, I have some commitments that have to be taken care of. And 5 years was my limit. So may I come back another time? Herb, as far as I'm concerned, you never came and you never left. You know, you're always welcome. This is as much your place as it's mine. You know, you can sit on the floor next to me as much as you like. So I said, okay, thank you, Freddie. Can I give you something for all this attention you've given me? Herb, what do you think you could give me? What do you think you could give me? Is there anything that I could buy beyond what I have here? Do I have everything? Yes, you do. So, then, the superior 21st century man steps out of the hovel and goes back to his house. Gets in his car and drives around, lives, starts eating again, starts drinking again, starts having his body be utilized for things that it's not programmed to do. And then the body begins to have all sorts of little aches and pains because of the vibrations I put in from other people's handling of the food, other people's handling of the water, other people's handling of the attitude and the atmosphere. At Freddy's, there was only one atmosphere there, and that was Freddy's. That was the atmosphere of peace, the atmosphere of stillness, the atmosphere of all good. Okay, I'm in my world, and I'm in my world for about a week, and my friends come and visit and things. And I'm taking a shower, and I'm watering the lawn, and I'm doing all these things, wearing clothes, doing all these other silly things. And my friends say, Herb, you don't look too happy. And, well, I feel something is missing in my life. They say, well, you've got everything, you know. You're independently wealthy, you know, you're healthy, you're happy, you're hearty, you got friends, you got house, you got everything. Yeah, but something's missing. And then you say, well, I did notice you had your buckets in the bathtub. Yeah, that was from my trips to Nigeria. And That's why I learned to put buckets in the bathtub, you know. And I did notice that you, your lawn is kind of dry. Yeah, I didn't want to waste water, you know. And what do you mean waste water? You know, we have an abundance of water. Well, you know how it is. No, Herb, I don't know how it is. You see, I don't belong in that world. I don't belong in that life. Because in that life, what's happening? I'm being a different person. I'm being a totally different person. Now, what kind of person am I being? I am being what the world wants me to be. In the world, but not of it. I'm being of the world. I'm watering my lawns. Now, what do I want to do? Where do I get the food that I eat? Where do I get the water I drink? Where do I get anything that I need or do not need? What happens? You take the seed into the pyramid for 5,000 years, and after 5,000 years, you take the seed out and plant it, and the seed produces the flax, remember? What happened during that 5,000 years? Was it hibernating? Or was it just not doing anything? Or was it maybe doing everything? Was it maybe cycling through all of the things that a seed does and no one saw it? If a tree falls in the forest, does it make a noise? If you hear one hand clapping, does it make a noise? Interesting, huh? These cones come for a purpose. They cause us to think. They cause us to consider. Where does the clap come from? That's right, our head, our thinking. The clap comes from our mind, not from the outer, because you take your hands and you clap them together. You cause a vibration in the air. The vibration goes through the air, and there are receptors that pick up the vibrations, and then they interpret the vibration as a clap, or my voice, or words, or music, or noise, or thunder, or lightning, whatever. You don't hear the thunder, hear the lightning. You don't hear the music. What you hear are vibrations that your brain interprets as music, because you don't really hear the clap. You don't really hear the vibration of the air going through there. That goes into your receptors called your ears or through your sense. People who are absolutely deaf. Well, what is the new device that I have for using with my cell phone? It's called a jawbone. Now, what is the jawbone for? You put it in your ear, that's so you can hear, but it touches your jawbone. So when you speak, the sound goes through your jawbone into that little plastic gadget and then to whoever's listening to you. And your jawbone only hears what's going on inside of you, the sound, vibrations going inside of you, not the sound outside of you. It doesn't pick up the noise of the car, the wind. It doesn't pick up anything. Interesting, huh? So you see, we live in such an interesting, complex world that we really don't recognize what it's all about. But now, am I going to be a member of the royal family and I fall in love with a girl from the desert, and in the desert she's used to wearing virtually nothing and used to being able to walk on hot sand and all that stuff. So I marry her. She comes to live in my castle, and in living in my castle she's not used to having a bathroom. So whenever she has to go, she just squats, you know, anywhere on the rug or anyplace, you know, because in the desert that was just acceptable. And when she wants something to eat, she just goes to a palm tree and climbs up there and pulls down a coconut or out in the backyard and chops off some pineapple and eats. And you say, but we don't do that. We take our pineapple out of cans. We take our coconut out of cans, you know, or we have them in the refrigerator or what have you. And so she's totally out of sync, totally out of sync. She would be very like Tarzan being brought up into London, you know, and he tries to live like an ape of the jungles in London. It just doesn't work. And he's not happy, and they're not happy. It's not that Tarzan is missing something. It's not that the woman is missing something from her desert. It's just that they don't need what you have. They haven't been raised in the culture that has what you have. Now, I would like to take all of you and have all of you agree to take the School of the Master. And in the School of the Master, you say, okay, we are starting brand new. We have no past. We have no future. We're living in the now. We're starting right now. Okay, all of us are our original purity and integrity. Ooh, how about that, huh? All of us are our original purity and integrity. All of us have no needs. We have no need for food or water or what have you, or even air. And you say, well, that'd be neat. But what do we do in between the time that we have a need and we don't have a need? There's a little slopover time there of coming to that new attitude, that new opinion. That's true. And that's why people coming from primitive society into an advanced society, you might say, are slow picking it up, are slow moving in there, because they still have their satisfaction with the old ways of doing it. Now, a lot of you are totally idiots from the word go to the word end. Idiots. You think that grandma's wood-burning stove was so wonderful. Grandma's wood-burning stove was so super. Grandma's wood-burning stove was so fantastic, you know. And cooking over grandma's wood-burning stove was, oh, wow, that really was making the things proper. And that's back to nature. And that's, yes, it's true. Yes, it's true. But that's not where you're living. You're not, if you are in a New York City apartment and you put in a wood-burning stove and then you have the wood brought up for your stove, well, you'd soon go to what? Gas. You'd soon have a gas burner in your stove so you wouldn't have to carry the wood up. And then what happens? You have your gas bill, your electric bill, your water bill, and so you'd say, well, let's just have electric. So you'd have electric, which would do the same thing that the gas was doing, which did the same thing that the wood was doing. But you see, the shifting from one to the other takes a great deal. Like our story that we tell about the roast, remember? Yeah. Grandma always made such a good roast, and mother made such a good roast, and the daughter wanted to make a good roast, and the daughter says, well, why do you cut off the end of the roast there? Because my pan can certainly hold it, you know, but you always cut off that end of the roast, but it sure tastes good when it's done. And so the mother said, I don't know, mother did that. So she went to her mother, and she said, my mother did that. And they went to her mother, and they went back as far as they could. Well, her mother said, well, I cut off the end because my pan wouldn't take it. I didn't have a pan big enough for the normal 5-pound roast. It was like a 4 3/4-pound roast, not five. So I had to cut off the tip of it there. And so, you see, no more vision than that, no more real than that. Yet, if you were to go around telling people that, do you know what would happen? Tell me what would happen. The roast wouldn't taste half as good.
Yeah.
It's all a mental thing. It wouldn't taste half as good. Now, you didn't change anything on your cooking, on your roast. You changed something about your attitude. And this is what it is. Ellen is drinking a glass of beautiful, pure spring water. I just dipped it out of the spring for her. And Ellen says, oh, that's so wonderful. And I said, Ellen, would you get me a glass? So Ellen goes over and looks in the spring and is ready to dip out the water. And she says, yuck, I see all sorts of sludge in the bottom of the spring there. And she throws up because of what she had to. Now, if she didn't know that, And she didn't know that. It wouldn't have disturbed her at all. And that's why our society today, we go around telling people about killings, we tell people about diseases, we tell people about problems, and we proliferate that by our continual attention to it. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So, what are we going to do about that? We have our friend Freddie, who sits in his hovel and meditates and is perfectly happy. He could not wait to get home from the busy city where he had been. He could not wait to get out of the vibrations of everybody there, rush, rush, rush. He could not wait to get away from the smog and the pollution of the air. He could not get, but yet he didn't even know that it existed. Now, he didn't know there was smog in the air until I told him, gee, it's a smoggy day today, you know. What's that, you know? Because he lives out in the hinterlands there, and he doesn't even have a fire. He is warmed by his own consciousness. Yeah. You see, what is it that you want? If we had a school for the master for people who really wanted to step into that step, we could have 1,000 takers and no believers. 1,000 could leave the school as they entered it because they didn't leave behind their toilets. They didn't leave behind their water. They didn't leave behind their air. They didn't leave behind the pollution that they had had. They didn't leave behind. The biggest thing they didn't leave behind was their thought of what was important to them. Now, what's important to you? As I walked the path this morning, listening to the first hour of the 3-hour meditation from Nigeria, I was listening to the words that were being spoken. I thought, so simple, so easy, so einfach, so fantastic, just what we need, want, and delight to experience. But we don't experience it because we don't get our bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. Isn't that true? And all we have to do is just shut up and listen. You know, fathers often say to their children, shut up and listen to me. Well, now the children would listen to the father if the father had something to say. And so whenever I hear people talking while I'm talking, I stop and say to myself, obviously I have nothing to say. Or else I would create them listening to me. Or I would create me not hearing them not listening to me. And I would just go on my merry way, being myself and having fun. And perhaps that's what I should do. Go on my merry way, being myself and having fun. And if anyone wants to listen, super. I'm whistling, I'm singing, I'm dancing. And if you're with me, wonderful. If you're not with me, I don't know that. Because I'm too happy to be disturbed by what other people are doing. Have a lovely morning, and know that you're very, 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 very special. And I love you. I love you. I love you.